ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, verses 34 and 35. Tadbidi panipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam Jnaninastatvadarshinah. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport, by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiry are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Yajgyatva na punar moham evam yasya sipandava
evam yasya sipandava
yena bhutanya sheshani
yena bhutanya sheshani
Drakshyasyat manyatomayi. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. Purport by His Divine Grace. The result of receiving knowledge from a self-realized soul, or one who knows things as they are, is learning that all living beings are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The sense of an existence separate from Krishna is called maya. Ma, not ya, this. Some think that we have nothing to do with Krishna, that Krishna is only a great historical personality, and that the absolute is the impersonal Brahman. Factually, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, this impersonal Brahman is the personal effulgence of Krishna. Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of everything. In the Brahma Samhita, it is clearly stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Even the millions of incarnations are only His different expansions. Similarly, the living entities are also expansions of Krishna. The Mayavadi philosophers wrongly think that Krishna loses His own separate existence in His many expansions. This thought is material in nature. We have experience in the material world that a thing, when fragmentally distributed, loses its own original identity. But the Mayavadi philosophers fail to understand that absolute means that 1 + 1 is equal to 1, and that 1 - 1 is also equal to 1. This is the case in the absolute world. For want of sufficient knowledge in the absolute science, we are now covered with illusion, and therefore we think that we are separate from Krishna. Although we are separated parts of Krishna, we are nonetheless not different from Him. The bodily difference of the living entities is maya, or not actual fact. We are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By maya alone, Arjun thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsman was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted toward this end, that a living being as Krishna's eternal servitor cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called maya. The living entities as separate parts and parcels of the Supreme have a purpose to fulfill. Having forgotten that purpose since time immemorial, they are situated in different bodies as men, animals, demigods, etc. Such bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service through Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. One can acquire such perfect knowledge, such pure knowledge, only from the bona fide spiritual master, and thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. Perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter for all living entities, and giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. This, under different standards of material identity, thus, under different standards of material identity, they become forgetful of Krishna. When, however, such deluded living entities become situated in Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that they are on the path of liberation, as confirmed in the Bhagavatam 2.10.6. Muktir hit vanyata rupam sarupena vyavastitihi. Liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yes.
So, again, I come to the same conclusion I did when we read the wonderful purport in the Upanishad. What can I say after that? So maybe what we'll do, rather than try to lecture on that, which I've been lecturing on it already for some time now, I'll just throw it open to questions immediately. Because I was told that there was a deluge of questions the last time. But there doesn't seem to be like a deluge coming this time. So maybe last time the questions got answered.
This doubt actually. First of all, there was a lot of emphasis in the purport about discipline succession. And the questions that come to my mind is Madhava God, our Sampradaya, is it coming direct from Madhava Sampradaya? If it is directly coming from Madhava Sampradaya, then why did we even have to rename it? Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have to give it a new name if it was original, if it is really coming from the Madhava Sampradaya as is? Now, actually, I was thinking about this, and my answers actually came from different words in this chapter.
Wait, now, are you asking a question? Or are you giving the question and giving the answer?
Okay.
Let's be.
The question is.
I think you already answered it.
The question is to comment on the disciplic succession.
You already asked the question. Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu need to rename the disciplic succession?
Sure, that is the question.
If we're actually coming from the Madhva Sampradaya. That's the question.
Okay,
correct?
Yes.
Okay. We are in the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya. And if you look at the last page of the introduction of this book,
31.
Excuse me? Page 31?
Right?
Yes.
31.
You will see the Lakshmipati, Vyasatirtha, Brahmanyatirtha. These are all coming in the line of Madhvacharya. Number 5 is Madhvacharya. Then you have from 6 down to 20, actually all of them are in the line of Madhvacharya. This is what it means to be in the line of Madhvacharya. The teachings are coming down from one spiritual master to another, unbroken. That's what it means to be in the disciplic succession. The name, the difference in the name is superficial. It isn't important. It doesn't mean that Lord Chaitanya was changing exactly the disciplic succession. But he was embellishing on the teachings. He was Krishna. Try to understand that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. Here it says that the first person on the disciplic succession is Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. He's come again in order to teach the same teachings. And he's awakening an understanding that had not yet awakened systematically and fully into the disciplic succession. It was first manifested by Madhavendra Puri, spontaneous love for Krishna. Madhvacharya taught that Vishnu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the temples of the Madhva Sampradaya, in general, there is Krishna, Venkateshwar, or Balaji, or some form of Vishnu, and he is alone. And in some places, there's, in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, in some places also, there's Lakshmi, Lakshmi and Narayan. So Madhavendra Puri awakened spontaneous love for Krishna and introduced worship of Radha and Krishna into the disciplic succession. Therefore, when Lord Chaitanya came and confirmed, Krishna himself came and confirmed that realization and expressed his desire to reveal the four spontaneous relationships in Goloka Vrindavan, the place where Krishna lives in the spiritual world. Then it became the Brahma Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya. And there's a group of within the Madhva camp called the Tattvavadis, who have even gone away from Madhvacharya's teachings. Now, this is a common thing in this material world. We should not take offense by this. If you've come from the Madhvacharya, you should not take offense from this any more than we should take offense in a comment that there are 1,000 or 2,000 sects of Christianity that are not all following, you know, strictly the teachings of Christ, etc., etc. You know, we don't accept, you know, bin Laden as, you know, in the line of Muhammad. You see? So, it's extremely important to understand this properly, the disciplic succession. And it's even more important, actually, for us in this time to accept the position of Lord Chaitanya. This is revealed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that one who worships, you know, Krishna and doesn't worship Lord Chaitanya, one who worships Radha and Krishna doesn't worship Gornitai, or one who worships Gornitai and doesn't worship Radha and Krishna, they are Pashandi. They are deviant. So Lord Chaitanya's philosophy of achintya bedha bedha tattva deepened the understanding that Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya came to give, that the soul and God are not one, that they're two. That's why Madhvacharya stands like this. Two. Victor peace. I mean, the hippies have made it something else. Peace. Peace, brother. Peace. But actually the original meaning of that was that there are two. Not one, two. The soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this relationship that's being discussed here in this purport that comes from the disciplic succession, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the absolute truth and that the living being is eternally his servant, and that's the identity of the soul eternally. This is the conclusion of the disciplic succession. But how that relationship manifests itself is the issue. Souls that want to worship, that desire a servitude relationship in which their conception of service is in awe and reverence, fall into that sampradaya. And Lord Chaitanya's sampradaya, within the same sampradaya, you know, is teaching spontaneous love for Radha and Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, which is the only place where that love exists. Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna are the same person. They are not different persons. And the fight between their followers is Maya. Therefore, it says here, yajgyatva na punar moham evam yasasi pandava yena bhutanya sheshane draksha shatmanyatomayi. And Srila Prabhupada specifically stresses this in the purport. the relationship that the soul has with Krishna or his expansions will vary. It's not one. It's variegated. There are many relationships. They are not different spiritually, but there is variety in the spiritual world. This, at the end, see, liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. So one can be have a sense of being an eternal servant of Krishna. That is the essence of spiritual life, is the basis of spiritual life. From that foundation of service, of selfless service, develops all the other relationships with Vishnu and Krishna. Just like in our ordinary relationships. You know, the relationship between the lover and the beloved, is there not service? Does the lover and beloved not want to please the other by service? By making arrangements to make the others? No? Yes, of course. Is there not relationship of service from parent to child? Is there not relationship of service husband to wife? They're both in relationship of service. So that essence of the awakening, of the realization that I am an eternal servant of Krishna, that is the beginning of spiritual life. And as one's Krishna consciousness develops, one becomes spontaneously or naturally, let's say naturally, attracted to one of the incarnations or one of the expansions of Krishna in relationship. When your desire and when your relationship and when your mood is to serve Krishna in awe and reverence, you go to Vaikuntha and you worship Lord Vishnu in service. And in that place, the servitude will come only as far as service slightly tinged with friendship, slightly. It will not go beyond that intimacy in relationship. The love is the same. Love is the same. But our love is expressed differently according to the relationship. But it's not the, it's the same thing. It's our original consciousness. So Shankaracharya came, Buddha came, and he took this concept out of spiritual life by on purpose. And in the Padma Purana, there's a verse which describes how Lord Krishna instructed him to come to the earth and preach this philosophy. Actually, that was Shankaracharya, I'm sorry. Lord Krishna instructed Shankaracharya to come and preach covered Buddhism in order to re-inject or reinvigorate the faith in the Indian subcontinent in the Vedic scriptures, because Buddha took the faith away from the population in the Vedic scriptures. They were misusing their authority, the Brahmins, the priestly class, were misusing their authority and causing unnecessary and unwanted slaughter of animals for economic development. They were taking the money that they were getting and, you know, offering the meat in the temples and then making profit and money changing. And it turned into corruption. It had become corrupted. So Buddha came and he cut that. Because if one's sinful, he cannot remember Krishna. If one is sinful, he cannot think of God. Then Krishna instructed, and the Buddhist philosophy is shunyavat. It is void. Their conception is that there is no individual soul. Their philosophy is that the creation is eternal, therefore there's no question of, you know, creator. There's no question of individual soul. It's just the creation keeps in flux. And the same energy comes out, you know, in different forms, and therefore there is birth and rebirth, but there's no soul taking birth and rebirth. It's just the material energy reconfiguring itself. That's their philosophy. But there's a defect in that philosophy, and that is that the ultimate truth is nirvana, or annihilation of the variety of material existence. But Lord Chaitanya pointed out, and also Madhvacharya pointed out, as did Shankaracharya, as did all the acharyas following, that there's no question of eternality if there is destruction. The material world cannot be eternal if there's destruction, and their whole premise of what is perfect, what is full self-realization, is annihilation, nirvana, annihilation of the self, annihilation of the varieties of material existence. No concept of God in Buddhism. Of course, I just came from Japan, and everybody, you know, worships the form of Buddha. And in this way, Krishna tricked them into doing some devotional service, even though, you know, there was no, you know, devotional philosophy there. They all go, if you go to this day, they have these shrines that have been turned into, you know, more or less museums that people go, you know, to see, tourists and, you know, pilgrims or whatever. But everybody goes in front of Buddha, you know, and goes like this, and, you know, offers the incense. It's so charming, actually, to watch how innocently they just do their, and because Buddha is Krishna. Buddha is an incarnation of Krishna. He's one of the Dasa avatars, Krishna. See?
I had a question related to this, which was, why is it that in certain temples, and I wondered, they have Balaji or Vishnu or Venkateshwara as the main deity, and Radha and Krishna are as such on the side along with the other?
Because they think that Krishna is a subordinate expansion of Vishnu. But that is a recent invention. It's not always been like that. At the time of Madhvacharya, it was not like that. That was introduced later.
So, is that man-made?
Yes. I didn't finish, actually. I was getting off onto a tangent. I may be here for a long time if I finish that thought. But the idea is that then Krishna, he instructed Shiva, Lord Shiva, to come in the form of Shankaracharya and teach covered Buddhism. Because by that time, when Buddha came, you know, and preached this nirvana and this nonviolence and this method of meditation, which did not come in disciplic succession, which was just self-contained, it spread all through. And what he had to do in order to actually propagate that was to defy the Vedas. He does not accept the authority of the Vedas. Therefore, we don't accept Buddha, the philosophy of Buddha. But at the same time, in the Bhagavatam, it describes that Buddha is an incarnation of Krishna. So we worship Buddha as an incarnation of Krishna. This is difficult to understand. It's not easy. Therefore, what does it say in the very beginning of this first port? The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. First sentence in the purport of that all-important verse, that we must get this knowledge from disciplic succession. All the intricacies of these concepts and how it fits together in historical incidents and how it all becomes reconciled one after the other and culminates in Lord Chaitanya's appearance and the philosophy of Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. There's different philosophies that came from these sampradayas, and they were not contradicting. This is my point I'm making, is that they were trying to offset or refute Buddhism and then ultimately refute Mayavad philosophy, which says there is God. See, Buddha said there is no God. But Shankaracharya came and said there is God, but he's not personal. The ultimate form of God is formless. this is very bad. This is worse. The Buddhists are better because at least they admit there's no God. Okay, their path is they're like clear. But the Mayavada is not clear. Because why? Because they will say that the form of Krishna is Maya. That is why it is called Mayavada, path of Maya. They accept Krishna's form as made of material energy. And therefore it cuts the faith in Krishna. In the name of spiritual, in the name of the Vedas, it cuts the faith in Krishna and Vishnu, both. So there needed to be a reintroduction of the principles of the Vedas. And because it was easier for the souls who had lost faith in the Vedas to accept the Vedas in the terms of Shankaracharya. It was done by Shankaracharya on the instruction of Krishna. Then came Ramanujacharya. And he said, no, it's not one, it's two. And then Madhvacharya qualified that philosophy. And the details of that philosophy, we hardly have any time nor the brain to go into the intricate details of it. But suffice it to say that Lord Chaitanya then came and he gave achintya bheda-abheda tattva. It is simultaneously one and different, the absolute truth and everything else. That reconciled everything. And on top of that reconciliation, Lord Chaitanya introduced the relationships that Krishna has in Goloka Vrindavan with his spontaneous devotees. That is pure love without a tinge of awe and veneration or reverence. So Krishna came in the form of Lord Chaitanya. He came in the disciplic session of Madhvacharya. He didn't need to. Krishna doesn't need a spiritual master. He's the source of all spiritual masters. He's the Adi Guru. He's the original spiritual master. But he does that why? Chakirshu Lokasambraha. He does that to set an example for others. Everyone needs spiritual master. Therefore, even Krishna took Sandipani Muni as his spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya took Ishwarapuri as his spiritual master. Therefore, the essential point is to receive the teachings of Krishna in line from Krishna, unbroken. That's why it says here that you can only get it from a bona fide spiritual master in that line of disciplic succession. But the bona fide spiritual master must not distort the teaching. Otherwise, he's not bona fide spiritual master. It doesn't mean that just anybody who comes along with a beard and you know, saffron cloth and a lot of followers, that he's necessarily a bona fide spiritual master. The test of his guruhood, you know, is whether or not he's distorting the teachings. And what is the proof that the teachings are distorted? The follower will not be able to obtain real knowledge, and he will fall again into illusion. Therefore, the second verse. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. Now, that doesn't mean that just because the bona fide spiritual master is bona fide, that you cannot fall into illusion. You can if you don't accept the teachings, if you distort the teachings. The spiritual master, you know, an unbona fide spiritual master can distort the teachings, but you may have a bona fide spiritual master and you may distort the teachings. In either case, it's broken. The disciplic session is broken. Or at least the relationship is broken. The disciplic succession is never broken. It just appears to be broken. Therefore, Krishna says, evam, in the beginning of the chapter, evam parampara praptam imam rajayashayo vidu sakalaneha mahato yogo brasht bhajayate. It appears to be broken, but it is not broken because Krishna, or someone that Krishna sends specifically, makes sure that the disciplic succession remains intact. So what is the proof of this? The proof of this is that Lord Chaitanya's disciplic succession spread throughout the world. It spread throughout the world. It is not meant just to maintain the cultural integrity of a person born in Sri Vaishnavism or Madhva, Tattvavad, or any other disciplic succession. It is meant to distribute Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Therefore, if one is sectarian in one's view and one accepts the disciplic succession in a sectarian spirit, then he will fight with the other sect unnecessarily and lose that vision that is described here, that all living beings are a part of Krishna. This is the evil of sectarian religion. Sectarian religion is evil in the sense that it cuts the vision of the soul to be able to see that every living being is a part of Krishna. Every living being is a part of God. Not that just the, you know, living beings that I was born into this, you know, sect, you know, we're part of God and the rest of them are not. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya came to actually reawaken or reinvigorate or again put forth this idea that all living beings are a part of Krishna. Because over time, as I said before, in the talk we were doing before in the Ishapanishad, over time we have a tendency to forget. That is the nature of time. Therefore he says, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, time I am destroyer of the worlds. Not only to destroy remembrance, it destroys everything. And ultimately destroys the whole material creation. So then where will your sectarian spirit be? When the whole universe is destroyed. Then what would be the difference between, you know, the Shankarites and the Buddhists and the, you know, Madhvas and the, you know, Rabbanuja Sri and all these sampradayas? It would be finished. Because there's actually only one process of religion. The details are not essential. The essential is the love for Krishna. How that love is manifested and how is it expressed by an individual soul, that is a detail. That is a detail. And if you fight over the detail and lose the essence, then you're an illusion. That's called Maya. Well, at least it rings nicely. The ring doesn't make us forget Prabhupada and Krishna. Okay, you don't have to pay the fine. I mean, Maharaj last week, he gave such a charming and such an intricate, nice lecture about our envy and how it manifests in so many different ways and how we're thinking that we're pure or we're thinking that we've got it right. But in actuality, you know, we don't really want to give Krishna the full due, the full, you know, devotion, you know, that he deserves. So the answer to the question is, it is not wrong to worship, you know, Krishna as Vishnu. It is not wrong because he's the same person. Vishnu is an expansion of Krishna. He's the same person. That is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think in Adi 5, Adi Lila Volume, you know, and also in the teachings of, you know, Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami, later on in the Madhva, in the Madhya Lila. It's described in intricate detail. You know, whatever I said to you tonight is there in intricate detail in Prabhupada's books. I highly recommend that you read Prabhupada's books cover to cover. Not just one volume, but all the volumes. Cover to cover, first volume to last volume. And all of these details will be explained to you in such a nice way, you know, that you'll be able to understand and reconcile in your heart those apparent differences. They're apparent contradictions. They are not contradictions.
Can I say something? My mind was
was giving me the, my mind was giving me this answer, which Krishna himself directly said in chapter 4. He said, in the beginning, he said, 4:1, Lord Krishna said, the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivashvan, and Vivashvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. This superior science was thus received through the chain of cyclic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in due course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost.
Appears to be lost.
Yes, but he did say that the succession was broken.
Appears to be lost. No, no. It appears to, but then Krishna immediately restarts it up again. It is not broken in that sense. It's wrong interpretation. You're taking one, it's one thought. Don't take the one thought and then leave out the second thought. Then you'll become sectarian. You understand? Those thoughts go together. Don't take one thought away from the other thought.
Okay, at least it gets weaker and weaker and weaker.
It's not a matter of getting weaker and weaker and weaker. There's always a bona fide spiritual master. There's always a bona fide disciple. Disciple. So the disciple's concession never actually gets lost. It appears to get lost.
Well, if the disciple's concession never ever gets lost, then there would never have been any need of so many of these religions or so many of these sampradayas. It would have been really perfectly only one sampradaya, Krishna sampradaya, and that's it.
No. Absolutely not. The different sampradayas are not like that. The different sampradayas are coming from different persons who worship Krishna in different moods.
Sure. So,
and all of those sampradayas are still intact. But they appear sometimes to get lost because most of the followers get deviated, but there's always at least one follower on the planet who's not deviated in all the sampradayas. And then Lord Chaitanya comes and he unites those sampradayas because he's Krishna. He unites those sampradayas in the Harinam Sankirtan movement. That's what's actually happening.
And I just add one more shloka, which is 4:8, where Krishna says, to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium.
Yes, and for that reason, it never actually gets broken, because Krishna comes and he reestablishes it, or he reinvigorates it, or he invigorates it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Good question. Thank you. Yes.
By God's grace, I went through many verses of Bhagavatam, which were authored by, which are translated by our divine grace from the Prabhupada's form. And so the question comes like this. Nowadays, I perceive Krishna in all the living beings, in all the creatures, as his, I understand him, he to be the super soul, who is present in everyone's heart, in all the living beings. But how should I understand that he is present in non-living beings? How should I perceive? I can perceive that Krishna is present as super soul in all the one whom I see here. But how should I perceive that Krishna is present in all in the non-living beings?
What do you mean by non-living beings?
See, how should I see Krishna in this thing, like in a chair?
Huh.
Yeah, that's
you're not talking about a tree or a plant or.
Living being.
Okay, I'm just figuring out what you mean by non-living being. Because you're talking about the people in the room, and you may be talking about, I don't know, other living species. Or seashell or something. You know? Starfish or something. It's not a living... Okay, that's clear. So in this, how is the super soul present?
So how should I...
Yes, therefore, he's in this form, he's there in the form of time. Kala. The super soul is in each and every atom of the universe. How should you reciprocate? You should use it in Krishna's service. And if you use it in Krishna's service, it again regains its spiritual nature. And interaction with it will not cause you to forget Krishna, but to remember Krishna. Actually, everything is conscious. Ultimately, everything is conscious, but it is covered by ignorance. But everything is ultimately conscious because it's coming from Krishna. The material energy is coming from Krishna. Prakriti para, apara para, prakriti. The material and the spiritual nature both come from Krishna. Krishna's form is all spiritual. Therefore, ultimately, it's all spiritual. But because he is manipulating it, it appears to us to be material or inert. Is that point clear?
Yes, I'm very clear with that point. I wanted to know this, that in the whole universe, the most symptom of the sinners will be there. So when will he get relieved? When will he be blessed by God?
Oh, he's already being blessed by God.
How should I understand?
Because Krishna... Everything that Krishna does, indirectly and directly, is giving the soul an opportunity to wake up. But the problem is that we're so, as I said before, insistent. We're so insistent on forgetting him. Eventually, Krishna says, oh, all right, you can forget me. But he stays with us, as I said before also. And as soon as you learn the initial lesson, which is you can't enjoy here, and you can't stay here, as much as you like to, as much as you want to, as much as you rationalize the position you've achieved, as well off as you become, materially and in every other way, still you have to leave. Therefore, you cannot exhibit real love here. Because whoever and whatever you develop affection for eventually will be taken from you. Therefore, the conclusion is we don't actually, this is not where we belong. So that's the mercy of Krishna. He treats us in such a way as you can't become completely comfortable in this material world. Because if you did, then you'd just stay here forever without him and you'd never be able to enjoy it. Real life, real spiritual life. This is the adjustment. This is what it means to jnana chakshus or shastra chakshus, to see through the eyes of the scripture. I'll give you an example. Say you're studying electronics and you're studying a computer or a, you know, high-tech television or whatever. When you first start, you'll see the thing, you'll see it working, you can interact with it, but you don't really understand it. You see, and something may be going wrong with it and you don't even know it. But a really highly trained technician who has actually studied each part and put it together and put it back together and taken it apart and put it together and understands the theory behind it and everything, he can see one little flicker or hear one little sound and understand, oh, this is wrong. You must do this and then it's okay. You see? So this is an example which is meant to illustrate what the assimilation of knowledge is. In principle, it's the same. In principle, the assimilation of spiritual knowledge is similar. So once you assimilate the spiritual knowledge, then you will see that all the energy belongs to Krishna, and eventually you will use it, you know, for Krishna. And as you do that, your vision changes even more. And eventually you will be able to see everything as conscious. That is spiritual vision. It's not to be imitated. It's very, very rare, very rarely achieved. Therefore, Krishna says, Manushyanam, sahasreshu kachchit yadati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kashchin mam veti tatvatah. To know Krishna in truth, you know, is not so easy. Many, many millions of souls, out of many, many millions of souls, koti, sahasra, you know, only one will even endeavor for perfection. Most are just overwhelmed by the material energy and satisfied with their lot in life. They won't even endeavor. And many millions of those who have achieved perfection, that means who understand and are perceiving that they're not the body, that they're spiritual beings, hardly one of them understands Krishna in truth. So that vision is very rare, and it's not easy to achieve. Therefore, it says again, I'll repeat that verse, or that line, the path of spiritualization is undoubtedly difficult. That doesn't mean, okay, it's difficult, then we should back off and not try. We're trying so hard for so many things. It's all difficult. You're willing to, what are you willing to do in order to try to become, you know, CEO of whatever, or, you know, make a discovery that's going to help, you know, people, you know, suffering on a certain level in a universal way. How hard that is. What you have to do in order to achieve such goals. What to speak of this goal, which is completely transcendental and the most difficult to achieve. So we should go about it with full-hearted enthusiasm, knowing, and this is what faith means, this is what full faith means, knowing that if you achieve Krishna consciousness, full Krishna consciousness, then every other thing that you have ever wanted to achieve or will want to achieve or have achieved, it will all be fulfilled perfectly. Everything. Including the perfection of your family life. Everything. Because you will see them as Vaishnavas. And you will treat them as Vaishnavas. And you will raise your children as Vaishnavas. And in that way you will please Krishna. And you will become perfect. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
I want to know, when will tears come when I chant the names of God?
When Krishna picks you. When Krishna selects you. When you've acted in such a way that attracts Krishna so much that he wants to see you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki.